Samach Aleph Amid Beis. Same thing, 8:05. That's it for a few weeks, and then it starts getting earlier. Okay, the Gemara is discussing in the Mishnah. The Gemara is discussing in the what? Yeah, sure. Take a Gemara. The Gemara is discussing before in the Mishnah. The mayor holds every tanai, every condition has to be double. If yes, yes, and if not, not, because we learn enough from B'nai Gadol, B'nai Reuven. And Rabbi Chanina ben Chizkiya, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel disagrees and he says you don't need a double condition on everything. As long as you make a condition, it's good enough. So the Gemara is asking, we find the different places that we find that the Torah itself doubles the condition. And the Gemara is continuing with this. The Gemara is 61b3. In the middle of the page. Okay. The Gemara says like this. Bishleim of Rav Meir, it makes sense according to Rav Meir. Hainu dechsiv, what it says when Eliezer was sent by Avram Avinu to find the shidduch for Rivka. Okay. It says over there, if the girl will go with you, good. And if not, if Rivka won't go with you, as tinaka mi'alasi, then you'll be freed from the vow. So he doubled the expression. If the girl wants to go, good, and if not, then you're going to be free. So Meir Kodra Meir, I understand why the Torah repeats itself, because you need a double condition. But according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, that holds a condition doesn't need to be doubled. Lamali, why does Avraham Avinu have to say, and if not, then you'll be free from the oath? It's obvious if he says, go get her. Obviously, if she doesn't want to come, then you will be free. So he says, no, it's the I need it. Why? Salka died to Chamina, because without that, if Avraham Avinu didn't repeat that you will be free from your vow, Havamina would think, what would be in a situation where the girl wants to come back, but her family doesn't want her to come back? So I would think, you have to bring her against her will.
Against their will.
Against their will, correct. Note that Avraham Avinu said, you'll be free, you're off the hook. You don't have to force, you don't have to go against the family. Okay? By the way, from that din of Rivka, we learn out that Kedushin can only be willingly. Because what did Lavan and Besuel say? Nishayla Snaida. Let's call the girl. V'nishayla Spia. We'll ask the girl, does she want to go or not? So what did Rivka say, interestingly? Rivka said, I'm going. And as Rashi says, even if you don't want them going, she said. Okay? So then the question is, but it said in the Pasuk, Im lay seva isha. But if the woman doesn't want, then you'll be free. Why does it have to say that phrase? That if the woman doesn't want? So the Gemara again says, Itzach, I need it. Salka day to Chamin, I would think that what happens if Hecha de nichale ledudu? What happens if the family wants the shidduch, but the girl doesn't want it? I would think, nice about Kochi, bring her against her will. Kamash Malan, so he says no. In other words, like this. According to the mayor, you don't imply from yes, no. That's why you need a double condition. Like we learned by B'nai Gadol, B'nai Reuven. If you go, you'll get it. And then you have to repeat. And if you don't go, you're not going to get it. Why couldn't I understand it from the statement itself? Because the mayor holds, by conditions, you can't learn the negative and the positive, or the positive and the negative. So the Gemara asked in this Gemara, why by Avraham Avinu did Avraham Avinu repeat himself? If the girl wants to come, good. And if not, you're free from the oath. So the Gemara says either works both ways. Whether the girl wants and the family didn't want, or the family didn't want it and the girl didn't want, so I would think you have to bring her anyway. So Avraham said, no. If the girl doesn't want, you'll be free from the vow. That means you don't have to force her. Okay, now, the Gemara says a different thing. It makes sense, according to Rav Meir, what it says in the Torah like this. In B'chukaisi Telechu, Pashas B'chukaisi. What does the Torah say? If you follow in the Torah, you're going to get all the brachas, peace, wealth, health, all the good things. And then the Torah says, "Vim b'chukaisi t'masu." But if you despise the mitzvahs, then all the curses are going to come. So he says that I understand why, because Rameh, everything has to be doubled. So he says, if you go in the way of mitzvahs, you'll be wealthy. You don't go in the way of mitzvahs, you'll be punished. Why does Rav Chanina ben Gamliel need the Torah to repeat it? It's understood that if you do good, you'll get mitzvah, you'll get reward, and if not, you won't. I mean, so like, why do I need it? So Gemara says, no, I do need it. Because how could I, I would think, if the Torah said only, if you go in the way of Torah, you'll get reward. I would think like this. Bracha. If you go, you'll get a bracha. In b'chukaisi timasu, and if you don't like it, lo bracha b'v'lo klala. You won't get the bracha, but you won't get the klala either. So the Gemara says, kamash malan, the chiddush is, no, that not only you won't get a bracha, you'll even get a klala. And it's also very simple. According to the mayor, the Gemara says, I need both. If you go in the ways of Torah, you get rich. If not, you'll get cursed. Because we need everything repeated. But Rav Chanina ben Gamliel holds you don't need to repeat things. So why can't he just say, you go in the ways of Torah, you'll be rich? So Gemara says, no. Because I would think then, you won't get rich, but you won't get cursed. So the Torah continues and repeats itself to tell me, no. It's not if you don't do mitzvahs, you're not going to get blessed. If you don't do mitzvahs, you're going to get cursed. So it's not extra, I need it. Then the Gemara says another case. According to me, I understand, it says like this. This is already not in Chumash, this is in Yeshaya. The pasuk says like this. Im tevu, if you're willing, ushmatim, and you listen to the what Hashem tells us to do, you'll be blessed. V'im tim'anud umarisam, but if you refuse and you rebel, then it says a sword is going to eat you up. Even though you'll be killed by a sword. So now I understand, according to the mayor, it makes sense, it has to be repeated. If you listen to Hashem, you'll be blessed, and if not, you'll be killed by a sword. Why does the Torah need to repeat it? So it says, Itzrech I need it. I would think the same thing what the Gemara answered here. Im Tevo, if you listen, Tevo, you'll get good. Vim Tumanu, and if you don't listen, Lo Tevo, Valero, you won't get no good, not good, and not bad. So it says, no, Kamash Malan, that if you don't listen, you're going to get bad. What?
Some places, Rosh, if you think from love, you learn hand, from hand, you know. So, enjoy, no? You don't need both.
Not by conditions. Even the mayor himself says sometimes, Mechlal hei nata shmei lav, from the yes, but that's not by conditions. All these cases, the Torah is using the word im, if. If are conditions. Correct? And because, like we learned when we started the Mishnah, the concept of condition logically shouldn't make sense. Because how can a verbal condition undo an act, an action that you did? Like you give a woman a ring for kedushin, and you say, that's an action. All of a sudden you start verbalizing to undo the action, if. So that's a big chiddush, okay? So therefore the mayor says you can only do a condition the way the Torah originates conditions, by B'nai God or B'nai Ruvain. But not by conditions, you could derive from yes, no. Okay, now the Gemara says, what does the pasuk mean when it says, Cherev tu oklu, okay, Samach Vezamed Aleph, that it said you'd be devoured by a sword, okay? It should have said, Ba Cherev tu oklu. With a sword you'll be consumed. Not a sword you'll be consumed. The word, it's missing a base. Rav it says like this. Milcha galalinta nama desari akushi b'tzoli. It means you will eat coarse salt, hard bread made of barley flour and onions. What does that mean?
That's the sword.
Huh?
That's the sword.
The Amar Mar, because we say in the Gemara, Pas Purni, stale bread baked in a Purni. Purni is a type of an oven. B'melech u'betzolim, in salt and in onions, kashim leguf kacharovis, is as bad to the body as swords are. So that's what it means. Cheref to uchlu, you're going to end up eating this hard, stale bread with onions and who knows what. Okay, then the Gemara continues. This is all going in the same style of what it's easy Gemara. Bishleim Rab Chanina. Now the Gemara is going back to Chumash. Bishleim Rab Chanina ben Gamliel. Now the Gemara is asking the opposite way. According to Rab Chanina ben Gamliel, we see something. It says like this. This is by the din of a seiter, right? The husband accuses the wife of committing adultery. He warns her not to be with somebody, and they find her with somebody, right? When Samach Beis Amir Aleph, four lines in the top. If no man lived with you, and you did not stray against your husband, Hinaki, then you will be exonerated, meaning you'll be off the hook. What do we tell the Satan? If you're innocent, and then, like the Gemara says in Satan, you're going to be blessed. You're going to have easy deliveries and boys and healthy and all good things. So, but according to Rav Meir, Chinoki, it should say the word Chinoki. Because, what is the Torah saying? According to Rav Meir, you need the double thing. So what are we telling the woman? If you're innocent, you'll be okay. Chinoki. If you're not innocent, the impression should be Chinoki Chenek. Chenek is when Eishes Ish gets choked. That's the punishment of an Eishes Ish. So according to Rav Meir, why does it say Chinoki? It should say Chinoki. You will get killed. So Amir Abtav and Ramchon says like this. Chinoki Ksiv. It says Chinoki without a Yud. Now normally, the word Chinoki that you will be free is spelled Hey Yud Nun Kuf Yud. In the Torah, it's without a Yud. If it's without a Yud, now Hey and Ches are interchangeable. That we know, right? Because they look alike and mean alike, and they come from the same throat. So therefore, Hey and Hey, Ches and Hey are interchangeable. So now, if you have Chinoki spelled without a Yud, so you have to read it Chinoki, because Chenek is without a Yud. So Rav Meir says, yeah, you're asking me a question, it should say Chinoki, then you'll get Chenek. It does say Chinoki. Either Torah says Chinoki, but it's written without a Yud. And if it's written without a Yud, then you read the Hey like a Ches, and then it becomes Chinoki. So it is repeated. It is double. So the Gemara says, okay, Bishleim Rav Meir, now I understand according to Rav Meir way it says Chinoki without a Yud. Because without a Yud teaches us that you read it, Chinoki, that you're going to get killed. El Rav Mechanina ben Gamliel, but according to Rav Mechanina ben Gamliel, Lamali, why doesn't the Torah Taka say Chinoki either with a Yud? Why isn't Torah writing without a Yud? So he says like this, Itzrich, I need it, again. Because Sal Kedai Techamina, I would think like this. If you didn't commit the sin, Chinoki, you're going to be innocent. Right? To be off the hook. She's innocent. Im Shachav, but if you did live with the guy, Loi Chinoki, Veloi Chinoki, you won't get free, but you won't get killed. Eli Isura Ba'alma, I only think that you would do, you did an Aveda. But maybe you didn't actually commit the crime. So Kamash Malan, it says the word Chinoki without a Yud, to tell us you read it Chinoki, to tell the woman, even Kontra B'chanina B'gamliel, if you're innocent, good. And if you're not innocent, I would think you maybe just get a sin. You're not going to be punished. He says, no, you're going to get a punishment. You're going to die.
This pasuk is just like before she explodes, why doesn't it should say...
No, this is what they're telling the woman what's going to happen. This is Kohen's speech to the woman.
What happens to her actually if she does drink it? She doesn't choke. She
dies. But she can't breathe. Yeah, but the stomach plotting and all that, it says that her face blows up and she can't breathe. It's a form of choking.
So it's a reference to what's going to happen.
Right, that's what they're telling you, what's going to happen. So the Kohen tells her, if you're innocent, good. And if you're not innocent, what's going to happen? So I would think maybe nothing. You'll get a sin, okay, you have a sin, but nothing's going to happen to you. So Pasuk says, no, chinoki, you're going
to
die.
But if she was to be prosecuted, she would get chinoki.
Yes. If there are two witnesses that came before and said that the woman committed adultery, she's going to get choked without the Saita waters. Right? The Saita waters is only when we don't know. So the Kohen is telling the lady, now you're drinking the water, and she's claiming your innocence, because otherwise if she says I'm guilty, she doesn't drink the water.
But chinoki doesn't refer to prosecution.
No, chinoki means she's going to die this choking death. Okay, next.
Did they investigate the witnesses?
By Saita, there weren't too many witnesses. Either one that he warned her, one that he... it's a whole argument at the beginning of Saita.
Something like the case that they don't really even give her the water. In case that they just sentence her to chenek.
If the lady...
Based on the two witnesses.
If the lady says, I did it. No, if the two witnesses saw her committing adultery, so then she doesn't drink the water, she gets killed.
Right, but do they investigate the...
Of course they investigate the witness.
Veracity of what
it's capital punishment. They make the witnesses crazy. Are you kidding? Any time there was capital punishment involved, the witnesses were made crazy by Beis Din. That's why the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says, there's two opinions. One opinion is that Beis Din, they killed somebody once in 7 years. According to another opinion, once in 70 years. It's called a killing Beis Din. Because it would make the witnesses so crazy that they would like mix...
Interrogate them
to make sure that... But if the witnesses held a story, then the person would get killed.
Why? For doing this...
But what happens if there are no witnesses and the wife admitted her guilt? She wouldn't get killed.
She wouldn't drink.
She doesn't drink, but she doesn't get killed either. Beis Din won't kill her.
She divorced him?
She goes out without a ksuba.
She doesn't
get killed?
She gets a ket and no ksuba. She goes out penniless.
I thought you said that you don't believe the woman.
No. If somebody comes to Beis Din, at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, Beis Din, and Beis Din is so different than the secular system, by the way. If somebody comes to Beis Din and says, Beis Din, I just want you to know I killed somebody. I killed somebody.
Yeah.
Here in America, that's it. You admitted guilt. They lock you up in prison, whatever it is.
But they're going to find proof, don't they?
In secular, if the guy admitted...
But they can't find a body or anything else like that.
In America, in secular law, if you admit the crime, they believe you. Now, one second. If... In Torah law, if a guy comes to Beis Din and says, Beis Din, I was just Mechallel Shabbos. I just killed somebody. I just committed adultery. All the, capital punishments. Beis Din says to him, go home and have a nice day. Okay? Because a person is not believed to testify against himself in an Aveda. Ein od meisim es atzmei Rosha. The Gemara says a person is not believed to make himself a Rosha. Okay, the Mishnah says in Ksubas. So a person is not believed. If somebody comes to Beis Din and says, I owe him $1,000, Beis Din says, yeah, pay. Even if two witnesses say you don't owe him the money, you have to pay anyway. Haidaz Baldin, Gemara says, all places, many places, Haidaz Baldin, Kameya Edim. Testimony of a witness to admit, not guilt. Guilt is not believed because he can't testify against himself. But if I say, you lent me $1,000. I'll give you an example. I say, you lent me $1,000. And I say, I didn't pay you yet. And I want to pay you. And two witnesses come that I paid you. Two witnesses coming. I said, no, I did not pay you. I'm going against two witnesses. Yeah? The din is I still have to pay you.
Why such a big disparity in monetary and...
Well, I'll tell you why. So the question is why. So, you get older, you learn the Zixos and Simon Lamed Daled, I believe it is, that discusses what is the concept of Idoza. He brings up four opinions. But the concept of Idoz Baldin is, I can obligate myself to something that Halacha says I don't have to pay, monetarily. Yeah, two witnesses say I don't owe the money. Yeah, so Torah says I don't owe the money. But I can obligate myself to something Torah says I don't. Right? I can obligate myself to give you money even the Torah says you don't have to. If you lose a din Torah, right? And the guy says, you know what, you have to pay me. The din Torah says you have to pay me. Torah says you have to pay me. You don't have to pay me. You could do that.
Money?
Monetary things. But when it comes to be punished, then a person is not believed on himself to say that he did a crime, to be punished. But a person, there's a concept that's called Shavi Anafshe Chaticha de Isura. Let's say if a woman, okay, it's complicated, if a woman comes along and says, I did something, sometimes she's believed that she can't marry a Kohen, that she committed adultery, that she's also for the husband, whatever.
We can judge ourselves or not.
What do you mean, judge yourself? We usually judge it the wrong way.
You can sit only on one side of the table. You can't be.
So this has nothing to do one thing with another. So if the Seita lady, come back to where we started, if the Seita lady comes and says, I'm guilty, there were no aides that she was guilty. There are no witnesses that she was guilty. So Bezin can't kill her. What she said, I'm guilty, she also is not believed to get killed. But she forbid herself now to her husband. Because she's, just like I can take kosher meat and make a vow that it's straight and make a nether, right? That I'm not going to eat it. So the woman, by saying I'm guilty, she made a vow she can't live with her husband. So she gets out, but because she did an aveda, she doesn't have the ksuba. Why should she get a ksuba?
So maybe some women would rather admit that so that they can at least get a get and get out of a relationship that they don't like.
Yeah, but that's only when Bezun had the ability to force the husband to give a get.
I see back then.
Yeah. Okay.
Only when she admits. And there's no, the husband doesn't know and there's no witnesses. But if the husband also says...
That what? What is the husband saying?
If she becomes a soita, and before drinking she admits, at this point she only goes out without the suba?
Right. Okay. Now the Gemara says like this. Bishleim and Rab Meir, there's going on another thing. Okay? It's understood according to Rab Meir that says, it says in the Pasuk, by the Pot Aduma, right? So it says you need to get spritzed with the ashes, sprinkled the ashes on the third day and on the seventh day. Yeah. So it says, "Hu yizchata bei vayem ashlishi uvayem ashviyitor." If you get squirted on the third and seventh day, you become pure. Then the pasuk says, "Im lo yizchata." If you don't become spritzed on the third and seventh, you don't become pure. So the question is, it's already obvious from the first part. The first part of the pasuk says, if you sprinkle on the third and the seventh, you become pure, right? So, according to Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel, it should be understood that if you don't, you're not pure. So why does the Torah have to repeat it? So he says like this, Yisroch, we need it. Salka daitech amin, I would think, mitzvah sazor bashish bashlishu bashvi. The mitzvah is to do it on the third and seventh day. But that's the best way. But even if he did, let's say, one of the two, it's also good. You have lechatchil and b'diavad. I would think, the Torah says you got to do it on the third and the seventh. I would think, okay, that's the best. But if you did it the third or the seventh, it would also be good. That's what I would think. So the Torah says, no. If you didn't do it on both days, then it's no good. Okay? Then the Gemara says, "V'he's a Torah atame b'yem ashlishi b'yem ashvi lamali." Why does the pasuk again have to say, right, that you have to do it on the third and the seventh? So it's like this. I would think, Shlishi, why does the Torah say third? Okay? To tell me the second. Seventh, to exclude the sixth. The Kamemayit Betar. Aval Heredavid Beshlishi Beshmini. Where you're adding date, I would think it's good. Meaning like this. Again, the Torah says another pasuk because it has to teach us another din. The Torah says third and seventh. Yeah? So I would think, you know something? If I did it on the second and the sixth, I understand it doesn't work. Because I'm taking away. But what happens if I did it on the third and the eighth? Maybe it would be good.
What are we talking about?
Paraduma.
A
guy became Tmei Meis. So he needs to get sprinkled with the ashes and put them on the third and the seventh, yeah? The Torah repeats itself. So Gemara said, why do you need to repeat yourself? So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, because I would think if you did only one of them, it's good enough. So the teacher, you need both. Then the Gemara says, why does the pasuk say again, you have to squirt it on the third and the seventh? So Gemara says, because I would think without that pasuk, that if you did it on the third and the eighth, maybe it's good. Because you're adding tumah another day. You're stricter.
Right.
You know, if it said third and seventh, I would understand. Second and sixth is no good. But how about third and eighth? I would think it's good. So he says, Aval heicha da'avid b'shlishu b'shmini. But what happens if the guy did it on the third and the eighth? Dukah mapish b'meitari. He's adding days of purification. I would think it's good. Kamash malon, it's no good. To teach us, it's no good. Then the Gemara says, "V'chite b'yem ashlivi lamali." Why does the Torah have to say that he has to do it on the seventh day? Kasal tekadai techamina. I would think that this, then that doing it twice, is only lekachim to go into the Beis Hamikdash. But letruma, but for truma or anything else, I would think one sprinkling would be enough. So the Torah says, "No, you need both for everything." Right? In other words, the Gemara is discussing why does the Torah repeating itself by third and seventh? So Rabbi Meir, we know why, because everything Torah has to repeat. Why does it repeat for Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel? Because Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel says, I would think maybe the third and the eighth day is good. Or maybe this that you need the third and the seventh is only to go into the Beis HaMikdash. But to eat Truma, which is a lesser level of Kedusha, I would think one sprinkling is enough. So the Torah repeats itself to tell me, no, you need two sprinklings for everything. Okay, we're going to start the next mission. It's a very interesting mission.
Wait, but this is, so the mikvah has to be on the 7 days. You cannot go on 8 days.
What?
In this case.
The sprinkling of the ashes?
Right.
Yeah, third and seventh. If not, he's not tohar. Huh?
If you make him extra, it's not accepted.
If you go on 8 or 9, it's not good.
No. If a guy did it on the third and the eighth, the eighth is only counted as the third day. You have to do it again on the seventh. Okay, this is a very interesting Mishnah. This Mishnah says a guy does Kedushin and he doesn't make conditions, but he says later, woman, I thought she was, but she wasn't.
What do you mean that she was?
Huh?
What do you mean?
If a guy says, before we learned, the guy does Kedusha with a woman, and he says, Hareyat Mekadesh will see on the condition you're a Kohen, Bas Kohen. Yeah? So if she's a Bas Kohen, it's good. If not, it's not. What happens if a guy comes over to a woman and says, Hareyat Mekadesh will see? Doesn't say anything. Later he says, oh, one minute, I thought she was a Bas Kohen.
He didn't say it.
But that's what he said. So the question is, the guy is coming along and saying, 1 minute, it's a mistaken deal. Mekach tois. I thought she was rich. I thought she was this. I thought she was this. But the Mishnah says, that thinking is worthless.
Why do we need the Mishnah for this?
Huh?
It's obvious.
No, we'll see. Let's see the Mishnah. We'll see why.
Yaakov thought she's getting married with Rachel. She's married to Leah.
Mm. This is still a good condition.
Why?
Oh, is it good? No, let's see. A Mekadesh Isha. Yeah, the Mishnah. A guy does Kedusha with a woman. And then, he, no condition, nothing, right? Then he says later, I thought that she was a Kohenes. Or I thought she was a Leviya. Or she's a I thought she was a Levi, but she's a Baskoyan. Or Ania, I thought she was poor and she's rich. Ashir, I thought she was rich. Viani, and she's poor. It says in all these cases, Areza Mokadeshis. The Kedushin is valid. Why? Mipnei Shalahi Tosi, she did not mislead him. She did not. Well, you thought wrong, that's your problem. There's no misrepresentation. There's no wrong advertising.
What if she had lied about her being a bastard?
Huh?
But he didn't put that stipulation in the Kedushin that I'm marrying you unless that you're a bastard. So in one conversation she said, but you know, by the way, I'm a bastard. He thinks, oh, that's beautiful. I want to marry a bastard.
No, the Mefarshim explain.
Stipulated in the
no. He brings down from the bottom, from the Mefarsh. If a woman actually deceived the man by making a false claim about her lineage, Kedusha would not be valid. Or, Kedusha would not be valid if at the time of Kedushin the guy made the condition verbally.
Yeah.
And then not.
That's very different.
Yeah, but I'm saying, again, a guy does Kedushin, what you thought at the time is not a valid thing to undo action. A condition can undo an action, but what you thought in a condition cannot do, undo an action. It's very logical, very simple.
She did lie about her lineage, but that wasn't something that he wrote down as a condition of marriage. It's still invalid because lineage is something you can mess with.
Can the guy forgive the condition?
No. What if he's misled?
He's misled by.
But he doesn't state it. He didn't say, I'm going to marry you because you're a Baskoyan.
Yeah, he doesn't state the condition, but he was misled by her.
What did she say to him that was misleading?
She lied that she was a Baskoyan.
She lied, that's what I'm saying, so then it's wrong.
He didn't say, I'm marrying you because...
Then, no, we said then. That's what he brings down. If the woman actually deceived the man, even if the man didn't make a condition, then it's a lie. But in this case, she never lied to him. She's accepting Kedushin. The guy thinks she's a Baska and he thinks she's rich or poor or whatever. What's her problem? The Kedushin's valid.
How about the face? She's fat or she's not conditioned? If she thinks she's not fat.
You mean if he doesn't have Mukadash, he hasn't conditioned, you're fat? Then the question is, what is fat?
Condition is if he's blind or not.
The Gemara speaks about this later on. We're going to learn this, by the way. If a guy does kedusha with a woman, and then there are certain blemishes that she has, so there's a din. We'll see later in the Gemara that between visible blemishes and private blemishes, that the family questions: could his family have been found out? You know, to check into it or whatever. But if a lady has, let's say, a very long nose, like Pinocchio, and then he does kedusha with her, and then he says, oh, I don't like your nose. I mean, you know, you can't say that because you saw it. You saw what it is. So, you know, you can't come and undo a mum, what's called a mum shebegoli, an open mum. He saw it.
If it's something that's
uncolored.
Huh? It's something that's not visible.
So that the Gemara will discuss later. Does his family see her in the bathhouse and not? That's the whole discussion. Okay, next is another interesting. So basically, this part of the Mishnah is a very simple part. It says, what you thought doesn't mean anything. Now the Mishnah is going to go in what's called Davar Shalei Bala Elam. Can you do Kedushin with a woman who's not Kedushinable now? She's not born yet. She's not Jewish yet. Okay, let's see the mission. A man says to a woman who right now is not Jewish, he says, become Kedushin to me after he's not Jewish. So he says, he's a guy. He comes with a woman and says, after I convert. Or he says to her, now he's an Eved. Now he's a slave. So he says to her, become a Kodeshes to me. He gives her now the money, and he says, the ring, and he says, after I become free, become a Kodeshes to me. Or, or la'achas shetizgayri, or after you become converted, or la'achas sheishtacher, he says, or after I become free, or after you become free, or he comes over to a married woman. Listen, this is a doozer. La'achas sheyomis balech, he says like this: now you're married, but that mukdashesli after your husband dies. Or after your sister dies. Because the din is, a man can't marry a woman and her sister, even if he divorces, as long as the sister's alive. So he comes over to the sister of his wife, and he says, see, after my wife, your sister dies. In after your yavam will do yibum on you. In all these cases, ain't a mekudeshes. It is not a valid kedushin.
Huh? Because it's not.
Because right now he cannot marry her. Right now she doesn't exist. In other words, in the world of kedushin, she doesn't exist now. I can't tell you something that doesn't exist in the world. All argument to Rameir and Chachamim, ain't the makna davar shalei bala ilam. You can't sell somebody something that doesn't exist in the world.
You can't take an order-based garment.
Huh? The material exists.
How about produce?
We'll see a little bit in the Gemara, but that's the whole story in the beginning of a mafka. The Rabbi Meir, Davish Shalei Boleilim. You can't, according to the Chum, you cannot
buy the rights of the produce that you're going
to get.
The whole concept of futures is not existent in Halacha. Okay, or a guy says to his friend, okay, this woman is pregnant, yeah, and this man goes over to this another man and says, "Im yol de ishtech and the keva." If your wife will give birth to a girl, she's mukadeshes to me. The guy's married to a woman. She's pregnant, right? His friend comes over to the... Because a father can accept kedushin for a little girl, right? Until bas mitzvah. So the guy comes over to his friend and he says, listen, if your wife gives birth... Now, she's pregnant already. He says, if your wife gives birth to a girl... she's mukadeshes to me. And the father accepts the kedushin. So the Mishnah says, ain't a mukadeshes. But, this is speaking that she's not, at least not 3 months pregnant. If she was already 3 months pregnant, when the babe, the fetus is already noticeable that it's going to be a child. And he says, im yod v'hokar ubra, Dvarav Kayamim, his words are valid. Vim yod in the cave, and if the woman gives birth to a girl, Mukadeshes. Because the baby exists already. No, a girl under bas mitzvah, the father accepts it. Yeah, well, she's not born. She's a day old.
On the day Moshiach comes, I'm Nazir. It could be automatically become
right.
Nazir, but Moshiach didn't come in the future. It could come to it, but it's not here yet. So how can it become?
So it's only a Nazir on the Tanai.
No, it's at that day you cannot eat, like drink wine.
That day?
No, forever. It could any day. No?
No, you're not saying this. You're not saying it right. If a guy says, I'm a Nazir today if Mashiach comes, so today he can't drink wine because Mashiach can come any minute.
Only that day?
Only that day.
But if he says, I'm a Nazir until Mashiach comes,
then he's a Nazir. But that's a Nazir. A guy can make.
But Moshiach is not here, it's in future. I wanted the same thing, it's in future. He's not here yet that day.
But the Shavuah is on himself. There's a Tesis in Ksubis, the beginning of the fifth parak of Ksubis. A guy writes a Ksubah to his wife. Yeah? I'm going to give you 200 Zuz. So the Mishnah says over there, at the beginning of the fifth parak of Ksubis, even if the guy is broke, the Ksubah is valid. That's what Taisa says.
He doesn't get the money.
No, they just got married. They're not divorcing yet. He didn't die yet. But the Chayra, how can you obligate yourself legally to money you don't have. So some chassidic tesis over there, that the explanation is because if I commit myself, I'm not committing money. I'm committing myself for money. And I exist. I'm not committing the money. The money doesn't exist. I'm committing myself to pay the money. And I exist. And the committing is, I'm committing myself. So then it would be a valid obligation. But here the Mishnah is saying an interesting thing. If a guy comes to his wife and says, if your wife is pregnant and she'll give birth to a girl, so that's not, it's non-existent. But if she's already 3 months pregnant, so the baby is existing. So even though it's inside rather than outside, it's in the mother. Nevertheless, if she gives birth to a girl, the condition is valid.
But the person exists. He's committing himself. When she gets born, I'm going to marry
her. Yep.
But the person exists. The man.
No, but you need the girl. If a guy says to a shiksa, yeah, Hariyat Mekadesh is after you become a Jewish girl.
That's totally different.
She is non-existent now as a Jew.
Even though he exists, that person.
But you need, by Kedushin's too, you need. You need him and you need her.
I think that's a little bit different because when it says Kedas Moshe Yisrael, one of the parties is not Jewish in that case. So how could he...
What happens if a guy comes over to him and says, I got Mekadesh Yisrael?
To who?
A guy comes over to a woman, gives her a ring in front of two witnesses, and says like this, Harei at Mekadesh Yisrael b'tabazu. That's it.
Jewish woman?
Yeah. He doesn't say Kedas Moshe Yisrael. A guy says to a woman, Harei at Mekadesh Yisrael b'tabazu, period.
Yeah, it's chal.
Of course it's chal. Okay, but there's no kedushin by a shiksa. Between a Jew and a shiksa, there is no kedushin. So this woman doesn't exist in the world of kedushin. Therefore, even though her body exists, but her kedushin ability doesn't exist. So even if she becomes a yid later, she's megayir, but the kedushin is not valid. Because at the time of the kedushin, she didn't exist. It's like a guy says to a woman, Hareat Mekdeshesli, with the fig that didn't grow yet. With the house they didn't build yet. Something that's not in the world, you can't, it's not going to work.
How about mixed marriage? It's not...